Hi, my name's Dan Seaman.
And I'm Jeremy Austin.
And welcome to the Perseen Podcast,
where we talk to industry experts and explore topics of interest to internet service providers and network experts everywhere.
Hello, and welcome back to episode 4 of the Perseen Podcast. I'm Dan Seaman, Chief Product Officer at Perseen.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Austin, our Senior Product Manager.
So today we're going to spend a little bit of time kind of recapping what's all happened in 2022, a little bit on the Perseem side, kind of wider industry, and also talk just a little bit about the podcast so far. And we, you know, we just kind of launched this thing and kind of getting our footing a little bit. So just talk a little bit about what our plans are as we move forward here. So yeah, so this is episode 4. I think by far the best one so far was the one where we had Anton and Dave come on and really do a big deep dive on RF and kind of focused around Toronto. What are your thoughts so far, Jeremy? Are we starting to figure out how to do this thing?
I hope so. Yeah, we have some really interesting guests lined up for, you know, starting in January. You know, folks who've seen, hey, these guys are fun to talk to. We love talking to folks from all around the industry, not just the wireless industry, but, you know, networking and ISP in general. And I think it's going to be a really good time. We'll continue to do episodes like this where it's just you and me, and we'll talk about, you know, things that we care about. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun to keep having guests on. That was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I definitely learned a lot out of that, and I think we can find many more people that can teach us things. So the podcast is a great format for that. So yeah, we thought we'd start with maybe a little bit of discussion of kind of some of the stuff that's happened Perseem side in 2022. We don't want this podcast to be all Perseem, but obviously we've done a lot of things that we're kind of proud of in the last year. So maybe talk a little bit about that. Do you want to kick that off, Jeremy, with some of the stuff and certainly some of the new features or things that you've been very, very heavily involved in?
Absolutely. Yeah. In 2022, in the spring, we launched our tier of scores. It's essentially, you know, Perseem Plus. They're analysis that allow you to actually manage the layer one efficiency of your network, understand how it's performing, you know, which parts of it are doing the best, which parts of it are actively, you know, harming your ROI. You know, you can put a shaper on something, but that's just a band-aid. You know, you really do need to make sure that your underlying network is actually operating at its most, not necessarily its most efficient, but at its optimized efficiency so that you can actually make money. Because that's ultimately, you know, we are here to provide a service as ISPs. You know, people do need to be connected. It's really important. But also, if we don't make money, we can't keep operating. So we have to balance those things out. In addition to that, we're measuring the capacity of the network in a way that nobody else is doing. That's pretty fun and that's exciting. You know, for me, the ability to get these features into the hands of ISPs, I've been working on them for a few years now, Dan, and you know, with a lot of really good feedback from the industry, it's really fun to put out something that is totally unique and makes people's lives appreciably better, as you know. And then later on in the year, in 2022, we continued to bring out new features as part of that tier. One of the most recent ones, for example, was, trending. So you can actually see what's happening to that quality of the network over time, not just the customer experience, because we've had that for a long time. But now also, what is the access layer actually doing?
I think maybe it's worthwhile to explain a little bit of what's driving this. And you kind of touched on it a little bit with the comment there on traffic management shaping is, we think the biggest problem that WISPs have is how do they deliver more bits? It's not about managing and limiting traffic to deliver less, and delivering more means being proactive. Like this is how we're going to compete against fiber and other access technologies, and of course other WISPs as well. And this focus on the proactive side, it's been a lot of work, but I think it's really showing some real value. Like we have customers that are being able to drive improvements to their network that they, you know, I guess in theory were possible before if you looked at enough charts for long enough, but being told where those problems are just simplifies it to the point where they can really make big differences in terms of the capacity in their network again, and not having to artificially reduce it. So the traffic management side is still, you know, the plan enforcement that we do and all the other stuff is still important, but it's really the traffic side of that is really kind of like a mitigation. It doesn't solve the problem. And we're really aiming to help on the top end there on the capacity side with these scores.
Absolutely. And I think it's important as well to note that this is an industry in which the customer will always use more. Mm-hmm. You know, that's inescapable. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the second half. And mm-hmm. in that world, you know, you're it's a little bit like the Red Queen in Through the Looking Glass, where you have to keep running faster and faster just to stand still. So, you know, you have to be proactive, because by the time you're reactive, it's too late to really to really do a good job as an ISP. So we feel that the, you know, the really best way forward is to be as proactive as possible, which means understanding the root causes, not not just trying to put a temporary Band-Aid over your network because you're bleeding. I mean, sometimes you're bleeding and you need that. But yeah, we really see what the best operators are doing, and we want to make all of the operators, you know, no matter what size you are, whether you're just starting out or maybe you're experiencing some kind of teenage growing pains as you grow, we want them all to be as good as the very best. And because we get to see a lot of ISPs, we're able to, you know, take the kind of best practices that we've learned from not just our personal experiences. You know, both Dan and I have experience operating wireless ISPs, but not as much as the collective understanding of the entire industry in the field.
Yeah, and just to kind of tie the loop on that, the scores are based on the behavior across all deployments that we see. So that is really guiding people towards being best in class.
Right. So let's talk a little bit, Dan, about the ISP industry as a whole, though, you know, wireless ISPs and others, that what happened in 2022.
Sometimes it feels like a lot happens and sometimes it feels like nothing happens. I think it, you know, the most tactical thing you've seen is Toronto's definitely getting some attention in the fixed wireless space for sure. We talked, you know, that interesting podcast talking about some of the low level things there. So starting to see, I don't know, we'll see whether it's a long-term trend or a short-term trend and shifting in the market share a little bit. That's probably one thing that's worth discussing. I mean, if you want to talk a little bit about what we've seen on that side of things.
And I want to tie it kind of into the history of what we've seen in the hardware space. So for a long time, you had this kind of binary choice. Do I go the Ubiquiti route, which is you know, really low cost, low barrier to entry, relatively easy to operate equipment that was going to be, you know, useful and effective in areas where you didn't have a lot of customers, so low customer density. And on the other side of the fence, you had Cambium, which had, you know, higher cost equipment, higher reliability in many cases, in some cases higher performance, definitely optimized for higher density of customers. And so you had to make a decision to decide, you know, am I going to essentially run this equipment for longer, or am I really just, you know, going to iterate over hardware variations more frequently? You know, Cambium has worked a little bit harder on the, I think this is my a layperson's perspective here, but I think they've worked a little bit harder on, you know, providing the kind of the long-term upgrade path in the network at a little bit more of a cost and with good support. You know, support costs something. So when you are paying for that, you know, more expensive equipment, that's one of the things that you're paying for. And Ubiquiti is famous for not having support in the field. You know, they've got some forums and they've been building a lot of really interesting tools, but they're not necessarily directly involved with the operator in a way that Cambium is. For example, like the last few WISPA shows, Ubiquiti hasn't even been there. They're still selling equipment, but they're not really engaged in the community in the same way. So on top of that, we've then had a few kind of outlying vendors. Let's think of them as like the LTE vendors, for example, who've come in, many of them with gear that is more expensive than Cambium, and in some cases able to drive more efficiency in the field. And so you really had to make some difficult decisions about, you know, exactly what price point you were hitting for homes passed and homes served. So, but those did not really take off in the marketplace in quite the same way. It's like neither the kind of lower cost LTE providers, think of like the buy cells, let's make this easy as Wi-Fi, or the upper end, you know, Telrad, Radwin, kind of a little bit in there. Okay. As well, in the local and regional provider space that we mostly work with, they have not unseated Cambium or Ubiquiti. In fact, I think both Cambium and Ubiquiti grew over the past year. We need to look at our fixed wireless report. And into this mix comes Tirana, which is a much higher price point than traditional fixed wireless, with the claims additionally of much higher density. So we aren't really in a position to evaluate the business case for Tirana versus Cambium versus Ubiquiti. We've never expressed opinions about that at Preseem. We've just said here's what the equipment can do. Now you have to decide what tool is the right one for your particular deployment. So what we're seeing in terms of the numbers, and we didn't talk about this when we were talking with Dave and Anton, but we have put the numbers out now with the fixed wireless report from 2022. And we're seeing very similar customer loading with the, you know, Cambium's Medusa product, which traditionally has been the, for a few years now, has been the absolute leader in customer density, how many customers you can put on a single access point. And right now, since Tirana is only recently being deployed, I mean, let's say the last 18 months or so, definitely in the last year, we've started to see them ramp up production and have some real good wins in the ISP space. So I expect that we will see that number rise even further as the equipment gets deployed out, much as we see with any other equipment where it starts out and people test it, they put up a few of them, they get some, few customers attached. And we are starting to see the higher density deployments actually being flushed out with Tirana. So I'm going to keep an eye on that over the next year or so. And, definitely by the next year's report, we should have a really solid picture of the peak capacity of what Tirana is able to do with the current generation of equipment. And of course, both Cambium and Tirana will have new gear out in that period as well. And both of them have really interesting things coming down the pipe. Mm-hmm. In terms of throughput, the download throughput is, it's almost double at peak for Tirana, but we're not expressing that in terms of efficiency. You know, you're really going to have to evaluate spectral efficiency on a case-by-case basis to make sure that that tool is the right one for you. You know, I remember when we were first deploying Mimosa, they were the first ones in the WISP space with these really wide channels. And here we could go do 80 megahertz or dual 40s. And it was not necessarily higher efficiency, but you might be able to get higher capacity because you had more spectrum available to you. So I'm sure that's going to be the case in some of these deployments where it's a trade-off between how much spectrum you have to allocate toward it and how many customers you're trying to serve with one single access point, or maybe with one, you know, ring of access points around a tower. Mm-hmm. So the peak download is definitely double. The average download is not double. Average download is about 40% more than what we're seeing with Medusa, but that may be due to, you know, that difference there between the average and peak, or the ratio there might be just due to maturity in the market. You know, right now there are, for example, a lot of Tirana access points that are installed in the field but don't yet have customers on them. And so that's mm-hmm. going to change the ratio there as we see equipment.
And there's some amount of demand curve there too. Like people don't just use more because they have bigger plans. So we'll publish some of that as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the second half too. Latency is very similar right now. I don't see a statistically significant difference in latency between Tirana and Medusa. And that's to be expected. It's still wireless. Neither of them are LTE. So the latency is better than LTE. But it is, better than 4G LTE, I would say, but not an order of magnitude shift or anything like that in latency. Mm-hmm. What other trends have we been seeing in the marketplace, Dan?
I think at our customers, and I'm sure this is just a case in general, that there's definitely more ISPs doing multi-access networks. And of course, what that kind of means, if you're going from fixed wireless, it probably means you're adding fiber. So we're definitely seeing a bunch of that. Different vendors, you know, some customers are using Calix, Adtran. We've seen a bunch of Ubiquiti GPON as well, which is kind of interesting. And I think this is a good thing. Like everyone should use the right tool for the right job. If you have the density,
Cambium's getting into fiber too. They know
that. Yeah, that we could probably do a whole episode on, because that's an interesting thing. But it's the right tool for the right job. Like if you've got the density and you can do fiber and make the business case, you know, fiber is great, but in some cases that's not going to fit. And I think that's just going to be the reality now. We're going to see everyone do that. So that's, you know, we're not going to talk, you know, too much roadmappy stuff for us, but certainly that's becoming a focus as well as doing, you know, what do we need to do to help our customers be successful in fiber networks as well as fixed wireless. So
yeah, absolutely.
Seeing a lot of customers with even just relatively modest fiber first deployments, you know, a small little neighborhood or something like that. And that's the best way to go, because the first one is scary. Like the first time you're boring holes in the ground and trenches and all the things you don't know, it's a scary thing. So, you know, seeing people get their feet under them there is really interesting.
It's interesting to see them, when we have, you know, kind of self-funded builds, as people are able to get a hold of fiber, you know, supply chain issues have been kind of extreme over the last few years. And, you know, in some cases, wireless is the only equipment people have been able to get their hands on, or in the kind of the routing space. You know, MikroTik has been better at keeping the supply chain full than the big hardware vendors have been. So we're seeing the traditional wireline providers getting into wireless as well, which provides some kind of competition there in the wireless spectrum competition, if you will.
Yeah, and, for sure.
And another factor in this efflorescence of hybridization, if we want to call it, is the funding that is coming in the United States in particular, not just the U.S. You know, there are other countries that are really getting behind this idea of, you know, broadband for more, maybe not broadband for all, but definitely broadband for more. And in the United States, we have, significant amounts of funding that are kind of scheduled out here for the next, 5-10 years. And there's a challenge process as well, where, you know, the FCC in the U.S. is trying to do a better job at making sure that the dollars go to places where there truly isn't service. So one of the things that's driving fiber in the WISP operation and driving some of these higher, not necessarily higher efficiency, but higher capacity systems like Tirana, is the necessity of making sure that the area that you serve in will be deemed as covered. That is deemed that you actually are serving broadband to whatever the definition, whatever that gateway definition is. And, in this case, first to actually install and first to market there is a significant advantage, because you really, you don't want somebody else to be funded to come in and overbuild you. That's as the CEO of Comcast said a few years ago, competition in the last mile destroys value, which is kind of counterintuitive process. So we'll definitely see, folks working hard to make sure that their coverage areas are properly documented. There's been a lot of discussion about that, a lot of chatter online. And the first generation of the FCC broadband map, which is now supposed to be detailed enough to indicate, down to the level of an individual home or individual facility, what exactly is available there. Whereas before, the broadband map was very generalized. You know, they could mark a census block or census tract as covered, and you might still be the guy at the end of the road to whom the cable plant has never been extended and never will be. So we're trying to make sure that that's more accurate as more money, billions and billions of dollars, are being poured into ISP networks here. Continuing topic of making sure that we're really measuring the right things about how broadband is being delivered. The FCC has also finally issued a declaration or ruling on broadband labels. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Dan?
Yeah, so I haven't completely got my head around this yet, but this is, it kind of look like nutrition like labels on the on
that's the point, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're going for, and I think this is generally a good thing. Like it's hard for consumers to really understand, just like if a package has 50 meg per second, what does that actually mean, right? So making some more it more comparable, I think, is a good goal. My understanding is that some of the measurements are a little ill-defined at the moment, so that's kind of interesting. And then there's some interesting things too, like tiebacks to the FCC orders around disclosures of how traffic is managed and all that stuff that need to be part of that as well. So this is definitely something I'd like to understand better, and maybe that this is a good possible topic for us to do in a future episode or a webinar or something, is get some people that have really dug into this and understand the real requirements. But it's going to change things, I think, a little bit, where people have to be a little more transparent than they maybe have been in the past.
I don't disagree. I think it will require people to be more transparent. The part I'm not 100% convinced yet is that it's really going to drive buying decisions. In many cases, people just don't have choice over what broadband provider they want to choose. And in the case of even like these kind of edge and rural areas where we're attempting to put funding for, high speed, gigabit everywhere, let's put fiber everywhere, the broadband label isn't really going to change the customer decision. Maybe in the sense that if you're choosing between Starlink and fiber, you'll be able to do so. But I think in general, people are able to make
I think I agree when you take it to the extreme of the fiber, because once you have a fiber strand in your house, it probably wins. Like, that's just kind of the reality. But if you're comparing multiple providers of other access technologies, having some things that you can actually compare and not just, bluntly, just look at what marketing looks prettier.
Yeah.
I think that actually has some value.
And I think then the distinguishing factor will be whether or not the FCC really adequately defines those metrics.
Yes.
For example, if you're comparing peak speed, or because it's always been a, you know, up to sort of best effort kind of service that we're describing here. But if there are latency and loss metrics on it, then I think it will be important how those are measured. And, you know, obviously that's something we care about significantly mm-hmm. here at Preseam. Not necessarily that people use Preseam to measure mm-hmm. it, but that they understand how to measure it so that they're mm-hmm. not just lying with those numbers. So mm-hmm. I think overall, I agree, though, it is a good move. And hopefully it does provide some transparency that drives consumer choice. And definitely on the disclosure of quality and management practices, I think that's very important. We've already seen some states in the US where, you know, they're really enforcing more, let's call it, you know, net neutrality like regulations at the state level. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be good to have some consistency at the federal level, where particularly if you're operating in more than one state, you don't have to worry about what the transparency laws are from one place to another, which in general, you know, the guidance has been you're going to be safe if you are disclosing what you're doing. And I think disclosure is really helpful because it allows the consumer to make a choice. They can say, mm-hmm. well, yes, I want to have an ISP that does X versus an ISP that doesn't do X with my traffic.
Well, and maybe one thing the nutrition labels thing is going to drive is simplicity, because a disclosure that's a 15-page legal document doesn't help the consumer very much. A disclosure in a fixed format that's kind of simple to understand, maybe it does. I hope so.
The disclosure of management practices is probably one of those things that's a hyperlink off the label.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be complicated to describe in some cases. But again, the mere presence of it is bound to be a good thing. Transparency mm-hmm. in this case is certainly, like, I want to know what days my trash is picked up. That's right. We need to have that level of transparency about how my bits are moved around the internet.
Yeah. Maybe we should talk, you mentioned the challenge process and stuff, but there's some other things going on there around the funding, like the BEAD NOFO decision. Maybe explain a little bit about what happened there. I suspect if a lot of our listeners are aware, but I think that was kind of a bit of a sideswipe to the fixed wireless industry this year.
It was, yeah. So to recap that, if you aren't aware of it, essentially the executive branch of the U.S. government wanted to manage, you know, this outlay of funds rather than run it through the FCC, which has historically been largely in charge of distributing funding for broadband through USAC, the Universal Services Company, the administrative company. So programs like E-Rate, which handles funding for schools and, you know, schools and libraries, and programs like there's a couple different programs like Lifeline, for example, which is it subsidizes mobile phones for low-income internet users, for example. So instead of running this through the kind of the usual channels, the White House ran this through NTIA, which, you know, and oddly for some reason, NOAA is involved in here. I'm not exactly sure how that's working out, but which meant that there wasn't quite the same iterative process of a proposal, which then can be commented on by the community. The FCC, as kind of, you know, the keepers of the public good, are required to undergo an extensive, you know, comment and reply comment phase for almost everything that they do. So WISPA, as an organization that represents a lot of wireless ISPs and just wireless ISPs in general, whether they're represented by WISPA or not, had no opportunity in this particular case to comment on the development of the funding plan. So when the plan was unveiled, it had several interesting features that were unique, or I should say more or less historically unique. One of those was that the funds are being distributed kind of directly to the states to then be administered by state level, you could call it committee or whatever the state government chooses to set up as a, not a legislative body, but as a mm-hmm. the funding committee, right, mm-hmm. to evaluate proposals and award funds at the state level. They did give some guidelines to each of the, you know, to all of the states that would be informing them how to operate and what sorts of proposals that they should be looking at. And one of the things that they did is, you know, basically give all of the states a certain baseline level of funding, but then additional funding would come from essentially this competitive process where the state is supposed to be, you know, kind of attenuating the proposals that are less likely to be successful, and then, at least this is my lay understanding, competing for the remaining dollars. Mm-hmm. And one of the restrictions that they put on this funding process was that it's not as if wireless is not ever going to get funding. It's that wireless as a technology is being deemed to be unreliable. And what that means is kind of complicated, but it boils down to it's not licensed spectrum. So if it's unlicensed wireless, it's unlicensed spectrum, which theoretically anybody can come in and compete with you on. And it's also because this isn't being operated by the FCC, there is some concern that, you know, maybe 10, 15 years down the road, that something will change in the spectrum landscape and unlicensed spectrum will be taken away. Historically, that hasn't been the case. Historically, spectrum has tended toward unlicensed rather than toward licensed, rather than the reverse, because unlicensed has been a tremendous success story. Oh, if you think of Wi-Fi, you know, as the most successful internet technology ever. So anyway, long story short, at initial gasp, it appears as if wireless technologies are just simply not going to reap the benefit of these billions of dollars that are being poured into the states. So in actual practice, that's unlikely to be the case. There will be wireless projects that are funded. It just gets harder to make that worthwhile. So this is definitely one of the driving factors behind hybridization and toward a trend toward a mix of licensed and unlicensed fixed wireless. We can talk a little bit about that as well, but essentially, if you are able to do fixed wireless with fully licensed spectrum like CBRS and other channels, then that is going to be eligible. But the performance metrics overall, just in this BEAD NOFO, this notice of funding, is pretty strict. You know, there, I think even the minimum tier that you need to be able to provide is like 100 down, and you need to be able to provide that to a significant number of users in your area, which means a lot of unlicensed spectrum if you're going to be doing that. So, long
story. Yeah, it's interesting. It definitely was supposed that there's a lot of talk about that from the WISPA team as well, and I definitely got the sense they felt a little blindsided by that whole thing. So interesting times for sure.
We'll take a quick break.
So kind of the next topic we wanted to talk about was a little bit of maybe future thoughts on kind of what's going to be the focus in 2023 for the industry as a whole. Some things that we're going to kind of track, maybe they'll end up being part of the podcast episode topics as well. So what's kind of first and foremost on your mind for 2023, Jeremy?
Well, we already talked extensively about fiber, so I really don't want to belabor that. But we are seeing in the market significant wireless uptake in general. The mobile providers that have gotten into doing fixed wireless with their licensed spectrum and their kind of more advanced industry standard technologies rather than proprietary, they're doing really, really well. Wireless has grown. I forget what the numbers are, but significantly over the past 18 months, 2 years, but particularly in 2022. Some of that, no doubt, is supply chain, where it's just more expensive to install fiber all the way to the home. But a lot of that really is the success of the technology just in general. Like the time to deploy is short, and when you are able to deliver a decent experience, there really is not a solid argument against running wireless. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the trends driving that when we get talk about the fixed wireless report on the traffic side. But for now, I think that's a trend to be aware of. I expect we will start seeing more competition, even in rural markets, as some of these mobile providers build out their fixed products into the rural areas. But it's not going to be the end of WISPs. Starlink is not the end of WISPs. There's still lots of spectrum required. There's a little bit of pressure there, but I think anybody who says the sky is falling, it's probably not completely right, but they might not be completely wrong either. This guy does fall.
Depends where. Yes.
In fact, we had speaking of the sky falling, we had a 20-year level storm here in Anchorage, Alaska, over the past few days. School has been closed for 3 days because some parts of town received over 2 feet of snow. I have a friend who has a ruler on the deck that's showing 28 inches of snow, and that's quite realistic. So people have been just staying home and not driving out because the sky did actually fall.
Cool. One thing that I've noticed is seeing a bit of activity around the 60 gigahertz stuff. I've seen a couple customers mention it. Dave on the previous episode mentioned that he's seeing some activity on that side as well. What do you think is going to happen with that 2023 and onwards?
I think we're going to see it grow. It's this need for high density, high speed deployments will continue to grow. 60 gigahertz is sort of the if you think of a triangle with three legs, you know, fiber, traditional low band fixed wireless, and then milliwave, you know, milliwave, the 60 gigahertz and adjacent bands. It's a little bit like the worst of both of the other two products. You know, it's it is high speed. So it's like fiber in that regard, but it's much shorter range than the other fixed wireless technologies. So it's essentially a really cheap way to extend the very last mile for fiber. Mm-hmm. I've had some success with it. I had one of the first high density deployments here in Alaska with the first generation of equipment back back in 2015, 2014. I don't remember precisely. And it you know, really promising technology, but ultimately it's got to be deployed correctly in order to be useful. So there are some larger ISPs that are figuring out where really it should be deployed. You know, don't try to do it in places where you're trying to go 3 miles between hops. It's not going to do, you know, you might get a link, but it's not going to make you happy. Mm-hmm. It's not going to preserve the value of the network. So I think we're going to see more of that continue to deploy. The technology is also maturing as well from a management standpoint. It's been a slow haul to get there, but I think we're finally seeing at least some stability on the product side.
Mm-hmm. One other thing that we're starting to see a little bit of is some consolidation as well. And I think, you know, what we see is mostly this seems to be a little bit on the smaller end, bigger guys buying smaller guys. What are you seeing there? Like, I feel like this is going to be a trend that we're going to see a little bit more of going forward. I don't think it's going to consolidate down to one or two from the, you know, WISPA says there's about 2,500 WISPs, if I remember their last numbers, 2,300 or something. That's not going to go down to one or two, but it does seem like there's some consolidation happening now.
It's not just at the small side. You know, we are seeing some kind of the upper end of the scale that's being acquired or doing acquisitions of their own. It is across the spectrum, but I believe some of that's under pressure from these funded builds that we've talked about. You know, it's going to happen that if you're trying to prevent overbuild, sometimes the best thing might be to buy somebody who's got some coverage that's adjacent to you and beef that network up. Or use those resources to start building out fiber. In many cases, the difficult, you know, the bottleneck that's preventing your growth is just not having the right people. And one of the advantages of acquiring, you know, WISPs that are successful is that you're getting people in many cases who are, you know, who know what to do. They know what to do exactly. Yeah. and are able to help you grow. So, ideally that process is beneficial for both sides. You know, I think if you're building a network and you aren't thinking about how to either continue growing by acquisition or by being acquired yourself, then you're not quite understanding what the real network effect is if you're not taking those things into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So the next thing we want to talk about was our fixed wireless report. So anyone that isn't aware, we've done this since, I don't know, 2018, 2017 now, where we've taken the data that we have across our customer base, which is a lot of data, billions of metrics today now. It was a lot even when we started. Now it's really a lot. And crunch that down and try to provide kind of a picture of the fixed wireless industry to the whole industry. So this is things like market share by different access point vendors, typical throughput, comparing different models. You know, what is a real world performance of a particular model as compared to the spec sheets? You know, sometimes joke that sometimes the vendor spec sheets, when they're telling you their performance numbers, are two radios in a basement and a Faraday cage pointed at each other. Not exactly reality. So trying to give a real world picture of what's happening. And we spent a lot of time on this in past years, and the new edition that Jeremy kind of led is about to launch. Well, it'll be launched by the time this podcast is published. So maybe talk a little bit about some of the new things that are showing up in this edition of the report.
Absolutely. I think this is probably the last edition that we're going to call the fixed wireless report, because networks are hybridizing, as we said in the first half. And a significant chunk of our data really is not just fixed wireless. So in this report, for example, we're working on things like, what kind of plan speeds do people actually achieve across all technologies? So let's say that we have a fiber provider that is serving gigabit plans. We need to be able to show our customers, or anybody who downloads the fixed wireless report, it's completely free. We need to be able to show them exactly what to expect as they move into different technologies. It's not like we're doing a head-to-head comparison yet, where we're saying, here's how much better fiber is than fixed wireless, or how much cheaper fixed wireless is than fiber. Well, we're not doing that level of comparison, but we will be doing more of that as time goes by, as the industry hybridizes. So one of the things that's significant and consistent is the percentage of increase from year to year. I talked about this a little bit in the first half, where this is an industry in which you have to keep running in order to stand still, because customers are using, you know, 17 to 20% more data every year. That's been consistent for a long time. Mm-hmm. I remember those numbers. That number 17% sticks in my head from to the Cisco Visual Networking Index, the VNI, that they'd bring out every 3 or 4 years, you know. And probably they probably only brought it out that seldom because it takes a lot of time to crunch these numbers, you know. We do have a lot of data, as Dan said, and it's a bit of a job to make this happen, but we learn so much from it that it's well worth doing.
Yeah, there's a reason we do this once or twice a year, not constantly, because it is constantly. Quite a bit of work.
Yeah. And the Google Cloud bill is a good one. Yep. So we have this increase in traffic. The customer's always going to demand more. So we need to know then, how are operators doing in serving those bits? And one of the things I think that's really encouraging is that latency actually improved. You know, latency is one of the best measurements that we have to determine what kind of a customer experience is that subscriber, that remote subscriber, actually having. And we saw a 4% improvement, which I think is huge. Year over year. Now, some of that is, you know, the phasing out of older gear that wasn't delivering quite as good of an experience anyway. Maybe it was overloaded, or maybe it's just a natural part of the refresh that people are doing. But some of that, I believe, is due to improvement in operator awareness of how important it is that they manage the capability of their network, as we're showing with Pre-Seam Plus and the mm-hmm. scores. So I don't know that we can give you a measurement on how much of that is due to our raising awareness in the industry, but I think it is a good sign that even under pressure, under significant pressure, operators really are doing a good job, and hopefully they're making money doing that as well. Another thing that we see that is a result of higher speed plans becoming slightly more popular. They're still, in the fixed wireless world, they're still rare, but overall they are growing in popularity. And what we see is that the median user does continue to use more data as the plan speed rises, but it is not linear. So for example, a user on a 500 megabit plan doesn't use 5 times the data of a user on a 100 megabit plan. And the ratio is actually something closer to 3 to 2. So essentially, you have to triple the plan speed in order to double the usage effectively. So,
and that's peak time usage.
That's correct. Yeah. That's not idle time usage. And the reason that we don't measure that is because, you know, any connection is idle a good deal of the time. And as the plan speed grows, that idle period grows even longer.
Bigger. Yeah.
So you can't just compare medians. You have to say, what's the behavior when the user's actually using it? Because that's when they care about. They don't care what the performance is when it's idle. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we see that if you look across the spectrum of users, you know, there's kind of a long tail in both directions, depending on which way you flip the graph. There's a few users who use a ton of data, and then there's a long tail of users who use almost nothing. So in between that, you know, trying to pick a median on that curve can be kind of tricky. So one of the things we did in this report that's new, along with some other new stuff, is we really separated out users into some different categories or percentiles, so that you could look at heavy users, the average user, kind of medium heavy users, to see what happens to their usage profile as the plan speed changes. This is a really, I don't think anybody else has done this analysis before, so I think this is a really cool one that will help you do network planning if you are an operator yourself, and help you understand it if you're not. So what we see is that people who use a lot, so think of those as the folks who are putting the highest demand on the network, in particular, like networks where they're not necessarily capped, they don't have a monthly cap or something like that, the usage tends to grow up to about 75 megabit plan. And then beyond that, it's almost flat. So like the difference between a user on a 100 megabit plan and a gigabit plan is almost negligible. Now, we are also showing that the users on the gigabit plans are getting the speed they want when they're asking for it, but that doesn't make them use more automatically. We don't necessarily have to drive everybody to gigabit. Gigabit's been one of those great marketing success stories, not necessarily based in reality of what people actually need. Now, if you extend out, we're going to grow at 20% a year, and we are going to be running this fiber for 25, 30 years, well, then it does make sense when you have the ability to pay for it now, or the ability to pay for it over a period of time that generates a useful ROI. So folks that can tolerate having a slower ROI, that's when fiber is beginning to make sense for them. So the median users, though, that was the high speed users. They do continue to use more, but the median users don't really even use more past 25, 50 megabits per second. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, all the way up to gigabit. They really are using almost a constant amount of data at present. Now we would expect to see that grow again for next year. You know, I'd be looking for at least 17% growth. 17 to 20% seems about right. And if I'm not seeing that in a network, then that's a pretty good sign that that network isn't healthy. That network isn't growing along with its users' demands.
Mm-hmm. Well, the new edition, I guess, should be released by the time this podcast is out. So if you're listening to us and you haven't had a chance to look at it, obviously available at Prezeem.com resources, fixed wireless report, if I recall where that is. And if you've downloaded it before, you'll get an email saying that the new edition is available as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So Dan, what are we going to do with the podcast in the next year?
Well, I think we're still getting our footing a little bit. But I think maybe the one thing I've taken away so far is the guests is good. You know, we can have these discussions, summarize things, and, you know, sometimes we can dig at some things pretty deep ourselves, but having the guests is really, I think, where we're going to try to focus a little bit more. So when we had Dave and Anton on last time, I thought that was a really great discussion. I certainly learned things. And we've had some other people as well that expressed some interest in joining from the wider kind of WISP community. So that's, I think, probably where we'll spend some time. And then we'll probably also have a few episodes where you and I kind of deep dive on some of the stuff that we care about as well.
Yeah. And not just the wireless community, but the networking community in general.
Yeah.
We have some fun guests lined up. So definitely keep your eyes peeled for, early in the year, we'll start talking about who we're going to have on. And we'll continue to do these deep dives, as Dan said, on radio, networking, business, pretty much anything but politics. We won't go there.
Yes. Yeah. Let's try to stay away from politics. That won't end well.
So if you have any questions about the things that we've said or about Prezeem, you can drop us a line via email. I'm jeremy@prezeem.com. Dan's dan@prezeem.com. And the website for this show is prezeem.com/podcast. Please also subscribe to the Prezeem podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts so you can get regular updates.
Thank you for joining, and hopefully you'll hear more from us in the new year.
Happy New Year.